Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, we're going to visit with President Emeritus of the Foundation for Government, for Economic Education, Larry Reed. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. Great for kids of all ages. I hope you check it out again, HistoryCentral.com. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Well, Croatia is a new entry into the discussion.
Well, actually, it's Slovakia. I wrote you Croatia, but I meant Slovakia.
Oh, okay. Well, what's going on in Slovakia?
Okay, first of all, a little bit of history. Slovakia was part of Czechoslovakia, as people used to know it. After the Soviet Union fell apart, Czechoslovakia divided into two parts, the Czech Republic and Slovakia. Slovakia was one of the strongest supporters of Ukraine. They had an election yesterday, I guess it was, and the pro-Putin party won that election. So Slovakia is about to go from the most anti-Putin country to one of the few pro-Putin parties in Europe. I have no doubt that the Russians were behind a large social media and other campaign to influence voters in Slovakia, the same way they've been doing in the United States and all other parts of the world recently. We can show direct correlation between people no longer supporting Ukraine and the acts of the Russian government and their media efforts, let's put it that way, of misinformation, false information, and all the things that they do. So it's very effective.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
No question about it.
So tell us in Slovakia, the system of government there. I mean, does this election mean that there will be support for Putin and Russia? Or
it's a parliamentary system where they receive the majority, it sounds like, and they will form the government. How much it's unclear, how much the effect will be is not totally clear. They are members of the EU. I think they're members of NATO, so it's going to be a little bit questionable what they're going to be able to do and not be able to do.
Yeah.
But the party that won was, ran on a pro-Putin platform, pro-Putin and populist.
Yeah, so tell us more about the
a lot these days.
Yeah, tell us more about the populist part of the platform. In other words, are they for? They're not for globalism. They want their own government. They want their own.
That's just government is not. They, of course, they're anti-immigrant, which is pretty standard. They also talked about that there's some economic difficulties and they're going to solve the problem. That's always the populist thing. Follow us and we will put a chicken in every pot, as the old U.S. I forgot which president was running, ran on
Harding.
That.
And Warren G. Harding.
Okay, so they followed that playbook. We'll bring economic success to the country. So that's more than anything else. But it's very much a populist platform, very anti-immigrant. Not that Slovakia has many immigrants. It's one of the interesting things. There aren't that many immigrants in Slovakia. They haven't come there, but it's always a good thing to hold over people is immigration. So
in a recent there's a recent development in Poland, and this is in our list to discuss, but nevertheless, as I recall, the relationship between Ukraine and Poland is starting to freeze up a little bit.
Well, there were some issues. It's a multi-level sort of situation. The issues between Poland and Ukraine are really just a question of economic and question of wheat and export of wheat, because the Poles are afraid that the Ukrainian wheat will compete with their wheat, but the military support remains strong. Poland is the main arms center for all the arms that are going into Ukraine, and Poland is, of course, a very, very strong supporter of NATO and the United States, and is buying billions and billions of additional armaments to probably become the largest army in Europe. In the meantime, there were a million people in the streets of Warsaw yesterday protesting against this government, particularly its right-wing policies on abortion and freedom. And, of course, they've limited the power of the court system. They've done a whole bunch of things to turn it into a semi-autocratic state. And, like I said, a million people came out on the streets of of Warsaw yesterday to protest, and in other cities as well.
And that's protesting the government in Poland.
In Poland, right. Not support for Ukraine, which is very strong amongst the Polish people. Remember, almost all of Eastern Europe remembers being dominated by the Russians, and no one has pleasant memories. That's why the victory in Slovakia clearly is something out of the ordinary, because, again, the Slovakians were occupied by the Russians for all those years. You know, the Prague Spring, if anyone remembers the history, in 1968, Prague was, of course, in the Czech part of Czechoslovakia, because it was in Prague, but it also affected Slovakia as well, and anti-Soviet feelings are very strong in the country. So it's very interesting that this party was able to pull off this victory.
Well, thank you for that. So let's move to Ukraine. What's going on in Ukraine?
Ukraine, two things are happening. On the on the battlefield, every week is more or less the same news. Incremental advances, a couple of miles here, a couple of miles there. None of the breakthroughs that everyone's been hoping for, but none of the defeats that the Russians have been trying to get either. So the Ukrainians keep on pushing them back, but there's, I believe the number is 20 million mines that the Russians managed to put in. 20 million.
That's just appalling. That's just going to destroy lives and create people without limbs. It's just awful.
No, absolutely. I mean, there was a reason why many countries signed an agreement to outlaw mines.
Yeah.
Because of what they do as, you know, secondary. And, you know, there are always stories all over the world, here in Israel as well, of people accidentally walking into an old minefield.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get rid of all the mines. So it's a big problem. But the Ukrainians are slowly, ever so slowly, moving forward in the battlefield. Today, the EU is holding the meeting of their foreign ministers. For the first time, they're holding a meeting outside of the EU. It's taking place in Kiev. So the foreign ministers of the EU are showing their support.
Yeah,
by holding the meeting inside of at Kiev. So, you know, one could be surprised, quite honestly, of how strongly the Western Europeans have come out in support of Ukraine, and not only in terms of speaking and not in terms of giving money, but giving a lot of arms and all the things that we've been talking about for years in terms of the European countries not sharing the burden enough. They're all spending billions and billions and billions to rearm at this point.
So, as I understand it, some tanks should have arrived into Ukraine by now, and apparently some F-15 aircrafts, if I'm not mistaken.
F-16s. We're selling F-16s. It's not quite clear where the F-16s stand. I don't think their pilots have completed training yet, but it'll happen soon enough. I think the Danes are giving them their F-16s. I understand what a lot of countries are doing is they're giving them their current inventory of aircraft and other and tanks and everything else, and then buying new stuff as well, at the same time, so to backfill what they're giving away. And of course, arms industries worldwide are doing really well. In Texas, the largest shell plant in the world is being built, and it'll employ a couple hundred people, and just producing shells around the clock because there just aren't enough of them.
Wow, Mark, we need to take a little break. Can you stick around?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to have more here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking to buy or sell a home? Make it a convenient and stress-free experience by calling the dynamic and trustworthy husband and wife team of Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties. Find out about their unique and complimentary post-closing concierge services not offered by other area agents. Matt and Megan Chionis give you the competitive advantage to command a premium price for your property. They personally attend all showings, create a marketing strategy for your property, and offer that complimentary concierge service to your potential buyer. This hands-on approach has helped them set several sales records in Pelican Bay and many at near-record prices. Megan and Matt Chionis understand that as an affluent buyer-seller, your needs and desires are unique. You deserve this level of service. Megan and Matchionis are passionate about the Naples lifestyle and they want you to enjoy it too. Call Megan and Matchionis with Gulf Coast International Properties at 239-269-5310. That's 239-269-5310. You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability. They know the politics and they know the policy. They help prepare elected officials to have winning strategies in the legislature. You can find out more by visiting the website, thefga.org, thefga.org. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCenter.com. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
So, Mark, there's news in Britain. Maybe you can tell us about it.
Well, the news basically is really relating to the upcoming elections. And at the moment, the Conservative Party is trailing quite a bit after winning the last group of elections. They're very unpopular at the moment, partly due to the fact that Brexit is very unpopular and they're the ones who brought about Brexit. And so now, we're about 3 years after Brexit, or 4 years at this point, there's a lot of regret. Because of all the complications Brexit has brought, and none of the supposed gains have the British people experienced.
Well, they have more home rule, so they have a little bit more control in what's happening in their own country. But what are some of the losses that you see as consequence of Brexit?
Well, there are two levels of losses. One is, of course, economic, and quite clearly Britain has been hurt economically by the fact that it's no longer part of the free trade zone. Many corporations decided to put their headquarters in the EU itself and not in London, which had been the place everyone wanted to be. And so that's hurt employment, and that's hurt the sense of, you know, London being this important place. The second part is just all the small things, like, you know, they don't move freely in and out of Europe like they used to. You just get on the train and you're in Europe and there was no passport, nothing else. All those things are no longer the case.
Mm.
And so people are finding that annoying. This question of you know, what they've gained, I mean, it's on paper. They have more power and the quote-unquote bureaucrats in Brussels have less power, but it really hasn't had much of an effect.
Mm.
Again, it comes down to policy, right? In other words, we can all talk about the fact that we're losing control. We don't have, you know, the government is doing X, Y, and Z, but that X, Y, and Z is really what's important. It's not who's doing it. It's what's being done.
So when is the next election?
Yeah, I think it's in about 6 months.
Okay. So that's it. So you think you're going to see some repercussions.
We're going to see some real repercussions. At least all the polls right now are showing it, and the Conservative Party is in a bit of a panic, trying to reinvent themselves.
Hmm.
So we'll see what happens with that.
Well, thanks for the update. Let's move to China.
So China is the ongoing crisis we've been talking about, but the real estate crisis seems to be getting worse. The biggest Chinese real estate company has gotten to the point where it's unable to meet all of its bond payments. There's talk about nationalizing it, although what that means in China is hard to do. It's not a straight, direct line.
Mm-hmm.
The big question is, you know, how much is the government going to have to come in and save the real estate market? It's a complicated issue because the real estate market represents a quarter of the economic activity in China. And it's come to a complete halt. Building starts are down to the levels they were in 2015. It's becoming a real problem. It's becoming a problem for the municipalities because the municipalities basically finance their government operations by selling land to build buildings.
Yeah.
And so that's ceased almost totally at this point.
Well, and of course, the real victim here is the investors and the people who invested in the real estate. That would be the Chinese citizens, if I'm not mistaken. So it seems to me this kind of sets the pins for some sort of revolt by the Chinese.
I don't think it'll be a revolt. I think you'll see the government step in. There'll be a banking crisis, which the government will then come in and backstop the banks in some similar ways that happened in the United States. A lot of the banks' assets will be wiped out, so they won't be available to do other things. But I think we'll see that happen. The overall economy is in deep trouble. The reason it's in trouble really fundamentally comes down to the fact that, to some extent, China was a pyramid scheme in the sense that it kept on building and building and building and expected to keep on building.
Right.
Except they ran out of people. They simply ran out of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we think back of China, we don't think about China running out of people. But that's exactly what's happening in China today.
Yeah.
So
are there social
demography is, to some extent, destiny.
And so are there programs like Social Security, Medicare, so forth, in China? In other words, do we have a smaller number of people trying to support a large, growing, aging populace?
Yes, you do. You clearly have that problem, very much so. Less people to pay taxes. And the population, the aging population, is growing. You know, very similar to what's happened in most of the West.
Mm-hmm.
Basically all of the northern hemisphere of the world shares the same problem. The U.S. a little bit less because of immigration, Canada a little bit less because of immigration, but basically all the northern hemisphere has the same problem: a drastically dropping birth rate, and of course people living longer. So you have a higher and higher percentage of people who are aged.
Yeah, and one-child policy, that's going to take years, maybe decades, to correct.
See, I don't know if it's correctable. You know, one of the problems is that, yes, they no longer require anyone to have one child, but couples don't want to have more than one child these days. It's expensive to bring up a child in China
mm-hmm.
because everyone has to excel, and the tutoring and all the things that go on are very, very expensive. And as we've seen all over the world, there seems to be a shared view of not really wanting to have too many children
yeah.
or have children at all. And this is a worldwide phenomenon we're seeing, and I think it's clearly in the West, but I don't think it's limited to the West, as we see in China, as we see in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, everywhere. Any place that has become reasonably affluent, we're seeing lower and lower birth rates.
Yeah. Can you comment, is China, the other part of that is the possible aggression against Taiwan and other parts of the world. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I'm a little bit skeptical. I mean, look, a regime that's in trouble sometimes takes action to change the discourse,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's talk about Taiwan instead of talking about the economy. And of course, that's always going to be a problem. But we don't know, and the Chinese don't know, how good their army is. Is their army able to take on the Taiwanese? The biggest problem, of course, is crossing the straits. It's very nice to do what you want to do, but it's very difficult to cross the straits and make an amphibious landing. Remember how long the United States was working at D-Day, in the sense of how many much smaller landings it had all over the Pacific, and then in the North Africa, and then in Sicily, and then in the boot of Italy, until they got to D-Day.
Yeah.
So landing in Taiwan is D-Day for the Chinese, and it's very hard to go from zero to 100 in one day.
And did I read that the Taiwanese are developing a navy, or they're developing a new?
No, they launched their first submarine, mm-hmm. Home-built submarine. They have a couple of old submarines they bought, but they've developed their own home-built submarine. I would assume it's a diesel-electric submarine, which makes sense for them, and I would assume it's quite successful in its design and everything else. It's designed wholly by the Taiwanese, and we'll have to see. They're planning to build 10 of them.
Interesting.
So,
hey, Mark, before I let
compared to the Chinese Navy, but
yeah, before I let you go, I just wonder if there's you're in Tel Aviv right now, and there's a lot going on in the Middle East right now in Iran, and relationships are changing and developing.
Yeah, the biggest news right now is this potential three-way deal between Israel, the United States, and Saudi Arabia. The basis of the deal is Saudi Arabia will get a defense pact, not a treaty, but some sort of a defense guarantees from the United States, and they'll be allowed to develop their own nuclear reactors under U.S. Control of some kind or another, and in return, the Saudis will establish diplomatic relationship with Israel, and Israel will take certain steps to ease the conditions of the Palestinians. That's the outline of this agreement that, if you would have asked me 6 weeks ago, I was very skeptical. At this point, it seems, I won't say likely, but more and more possible to happen. And that will be, of course, a big change.
And a good change.
A good change if it takes place. Definitely a good change.
Mark Shulman again, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. We hope you check out multimedia website, great for kids of all ages, HistoryCentral.com. Mark, always appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Bob.
All right, coming up, we're going to be visiting with Larry Reed. He is the president emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. That and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.